Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat writer for the Bay Area News Group. Opening up the mailbag today, I got a bunch of great questions about the disabled player exception, James Wiseman's three-point shot, and tanking. It's all coming up next.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, it's Friday, so we're opening up the mailbag as we do every Friday, answering the questions that you sent in throughout the week. You can send those, again, to Twitter, at WC Goldberg, or email them to wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. Let's get right into it with our first question. This one comes from Rick, who writes in, when the Warriors traded D'Angelo Russell for Andrew Wiggins in a first-round pick, many Warriors fans criticized the move, thinking that they didn't get back enough. In hindsight, do you think that they could have gotten more this past week or even at the next trade deadline? I'm assuming for D'Angelo Russell is what he means. No, I don't. I think that's about the price that they could have gotten for D'Angelo Russell. We saw this just sort of play out at a bit of a bigger scale, at least more of a bigger name scale, between the Wizards and the Rockets. The Wizards trading John Wall and a protected first rounder to Houston for Russell Westbrook. And look, D'Angelo Russell, Andrew Wiggins don't carry the cachet that those guys do, but both were on similar contracts, similarly thought of as maybe, you know, not worth those kinds of deals. It's tough to call them toxic contracts the way that John Wall and Russell Westbrook are, but bad contracts, I think, is fair. And what the Warriors got in return was basically what the Rockets got in return, right? Another player on a similar contract and a protected first round pick. So that's what the Warriors got. I think that tends to be the price lately. If you're going to trade like player for like player, whoever has the slight advantage is going to end up getting a protected first round pick. I actually think getting that first round pick protected only for selections 1 through 3 next year and then unprotected in 2022 was a really big win for Bob Myers. I don't think he actually gets enough credit for that part of the deal. Getting Wiggins, I think, was obviously a fit decision, right? I think Russell is the better player in a vacuum versus Wiggins, but Wiggins, the way he fits next to Steph Curry and then obviously a healthy Klay Thompson, just made more sense than D'Angelo Russell did, and you're able to get a first-round pick that's so lightly protected. It was a huge win. I mean, that pick could have easily been top 10 protected, lottery protected, something like that, like what we just saw happen with Houston and Washington. So the fact that it was only top 3 protected in what's going to be a really, really deep draft was a really big win for the Warriors. This next question comes from Heat Check Clay, who writes in, any word on how much the Warriors are willing to spend for the disabled player exception, or is it still too soon to tell? The Warriors should have about $9.3 million in this DPE available to them. I don't know how much they're willing to spend. That, to me, is obvious. Like, you have that much money, I would be surprised if they used that much money. If there was even a player available for that much money during the regular season. My sense, talking with people that work for the Warriors, is that they're not going to be using that disabled player exception right now. And by the way, I got a bunch of questions. Does Frank Ntilikina make sense? Does Lou Williams make sense to go out and target right away? No, I don't. The Warriors are not going to be using this DPE anytime soon. This is something that could be used in the regular season. If somebody else gets injured, then having that DPE is going to be really useful, right, to backfill that position. Or maybe somebody gets bought out and the Warriors, by the trade deadline, by February, March, they're outperforming expectations and they think, hey, maybe we can really make some noise in the postseason. We can go get one other guy on the buyout market. And people are bought out every single season, okay? So this is going to be a tool for them to use between now and the trade deadline. And obviously, at the trade deadline, they'll be able to absorb somebody into that exception. The wrinkle there is that if they trade for somebody, that somebody has to be on an expiring contract. That deal has to expire at the end of this season, right? And if they sign somebody, it can only be for a 1 year. It's basically a rental, right? That's the idea behind it. You lose Klay Thompson for the season, you get to rent somebody with this DPE for that season that you're missing Klay Thompson. So I don't know how much they'd be willing to spend. I'd be shocked if they spent the entire thing. I'm not sure they're even going to use it. It's just a thing that they have in their back pocket. If the right player comes available or if the right situation dictates the use of that DPE. Rudy writes in, Do bird rights travel when trading for an expiring player with the DPE? Yes, it does. You can acquire a player, and you would get those bird rights. There may be rules against re-signing a player that whose contract expires with the DPE. I don't believe that to be the case. I think with the CBA also, things could be in flux, but. In general, yeah, when you trade for a player, the bird rights come with that player. So I'd imagine that that would also pertain to the disabled player exception. Ben writes in, who's going to be the sixth man? And speaking of the sixth man, what's Iggy's contract status with Miami? I don't know who the sixth man is going to be. I don't even know if it's going to be the same player every game. I think you'll have Kent Bazemore and Brad Wanamaker. They'll have the inside track. At being the sixth and seventh guy off the bench, just like Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston were, right? But at the same time, I don't know what the plan is at center. So when you talk about sixth man, what are you asking me? Are you asking me who's that first guy off the bench? Because that's what technically the sixth man is, right? But that might not be the same every game. And or are you asking me who plays the sixth most minutes on this team? And with that, by the end of the year, it probably ends up being somebody like Bazemore or Wanamaker. But Eric Paschal is going to play a bunch of minutes. James Wiseman, I don't know if he starts, but he's going to play a bunch of minutes. Kevon Looney, if he doesn't start, he's going to play a bunch of minutes. So I think this is sort of the stuff that's going to be sorted out in training camp and throughout the season, right? Like, we're not going to have these answers by the end of training camp or by the end of preseason. This is something that this team is going to experiment with. There's so many moving parts, so many new players on this team. Steve Kerr is going to have to experiment with different lineups and different rotations throughout the season to try to maximize this group. So my guess for sixth man in this, in the idea of, all right, who's maybe closing games the way that Andre Iguodala was, again, I don't think that there's going to be a game-to-game answer to that. I don't think you'll be seeing them close with the new version of the death lineup like they had been. But my guess would probably be Kent Bazemore, more likely than not. And more often than not, would be that guy. But again, it's up in the air. It depends on how they want to play. And as far as Iguodala's contract status with Miami, look, I don't. It's expiring after this year. I don't think that Andre Iguodala is coming back to the Warriors. I think that dream for Warriors fans just needs to die. I don't see them reuniting anytime soon. I could be wrong. This is just my guess. But based on what they've done, I don't really see that as an option for them. And Iguodala doesn't really fit what they need anymore, people. I mean, yeah, he's a ball handler. He can defend, but he can't shoot. They need shooting. They need scoring. They've got enough long, athletic guys. I don't know that what they need is Iguodala. I think they need some other things, but I don't know that that's it. And I think he makes sense for the Heat, a legit contender in the Eastern Conference. He makes sense for them. I don't think that they're trying to buy him out anytime soon. If he moves from Miami, he's gonna be. It's probably part of a larger trade package to upgrade their own roster. James Wiseman believes he can make threes, but the Warriors might not just yet. That's coming up next. But first, let's talk about Built Go. Whether it's your mental or physical wall, break through it with Built Go every day. These easy-to-carry 1.5-ounce packages are perfect to bring in your briefcase or in your gym bag. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy, but without that same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for the body. It comes in three delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. So how does Built Go work? Well, Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein, a fast-absorbing protein that promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes you feel better and look better. Here's the offer. Visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 30% off on your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED for 30% off at BuiltGo.com. With group workouts starting next week, go back and check out my episode about the biggest questions facing the Warriors going into training camp, available in your podcast feed. Guo writes in, the Warriors' first unit is definitely suited for fast-paced offense, but I feel that the second team is better suited slowing down to play to the strengths of Paschal, Kevon Looney, Brad Wanamaker. Could you see Steve Kerr running two different styles of attack? Might make it harder for the oppositions to prepare. I don't think it's going to be that concerted of an effort. I don't think it's going to be that strategic. But just in not having Steph Curry on the floor, you're going to have to play differently, right? Steph Curry creates so much space and so much room for his teammates just with the shooting. They're not going to have that in that second unit. So that second unit is going to have to work a little bit harder to find offense. So I think what you'll end up seeing is, yeah, that first unit, they're going to get out and run. You're going to have Draymond and Steph running pick and roll in semi-transition. You're going to have them doing it in the half court in still sets. You're going to have them trying to create turnovers on defense and then get out and run in the open floor. I think you're going to see all that with Wiggins and Oubre and either Marquise Chris or Wiseman, whoever ends up starting there at center. You're going to see them run, right? And so, yeah, you're right. The second unit may not be able to run just as much. I think you have reliable guys like Wanamaker and Bazemore. You've got a guy who can slow it down, dribble 4, 5, 6 times and isolate, and Eric Paschal. And Kevon Looney, who's not, you know, the fastest guy, not the most athletic. I think you're going to see him anchor the defense, but maybe not being as much of a contributor on offense. So they're going to have to – it's going to be a grind, man. It's going to be a real grind for that second unit offense to score points. So it's maybe not – maybe saying running two different styles, two different schemes, again, might be overstating what it's going to be, but it's just going to be more work, right? I think you'll always see Steve Kerr – prioritize ball movement, prioritize swinging the ball, driving and kicking, and doing it over and over and over again until you find some sort of mismatch or advantage. And that's going to be the case in the first unit and the second unit. It's just going to look much different between the first unit and the second unit. John writes in, with the new Warriors exclusive workout video that came out recently, do you see a path for Wiseman to eventually be a stretch five this season? Do I see a path? Yeah. Do I see it happening? No. I just don't know that that's what you want to ask of Wiseman this soon. It's just this. We haven't gotten in training camp in group workouts yet, but it is telling to me that this team is preaching patience when it comes to James Wiseman. Okay. We know what his upside is. We understand the potential there. We know that he wants to shoot threes. We know that he thinks he could switch onto the perimeter. We know what he wants to be. We know he thinks that he could be this modern center who could dribble. I'm not saying he can't be. Okay. Longtime listeners of the show know that I have my doubts about his ball skills and his feel for the game. That still stands. I haven't seen him play a meaningful basketball game in almost a year. So we'll see what it looks like when he gets on the court. But based on what I saw, I have my doubts. And the Warriors are preaching patience. Do they think that he can hit that upside? Absolutely. They wouldn't have taken him number two if they didn't think so. But immediately, this season, I think they're going to simplify his role as much as possible. Run the floor, roll to the rim, block shots, be 7 feet tall in the paint on defense, just be big and deflect shots, and that's it. That's your job. And just don't get in the way. And that's your job. Eventually, I think you could see him expand his game. Maybe by the end of the year, you do it. I'm not saying Wiseman's not going to make threes this year. He's probably going to shoot them. They're probably going to come into the flow of the offense. But I would be shocked if they tried to force feed him threes. He's not going to be a pick and pop threat necessarily. I think at first they're going to simplify things for him. John also asks, how much better do you think that Andrew Wiggins will be on defense with that extra muscle he put on this offseason? So he said he's added a couple of pounds is what he said. I think we tend to, I don't know what it is with these offseason photos, but people really put a lot of stock into them. I remember a few years ago when I was covering the Heat and this photo came out of like Chris Bosh just looking like Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Everybody's like, oh my God, he's going to play center full time and, you know, he's going to be this player. And he showed up and he's like, no, you didn't look like that. And something with the lighting or the angle or whatever it was, maybe it was Photoshopped. I don't know. But there's this photo going around on Twitter about Wiggins just looking absolutely yoked. And I'm not saying he's not. He said he put on weight. I wouldn't read that much into it. But Steve Kerr has said, like, he is a strong player. And he imagines him playing some power forward, some four this year in some small ball lineups. And he's got the strength to do it. He's got this wiry strength about him. So I think that that's going to be helpful. He believes he can guard positions 1 through 4 based in that 12-game sample size that we saw last year. I believe him. He guarded point guards really well, and he can slide down and guard the four. So I have no problems with that statement. I think he's going to be much better defensively in Golden State than he was in Minnesota. He was just asked to do too much with the Timberwolves. He was asked to save the offense and be this all-pro defender right away, and he didn't have the structure to do it. He was asking too much too soon. I think with the Warriors, he's going to be asked to do a little bit less and ease into that role and grow a little bit more organically into that. I think it'll serve him well. OS28 writes in, without Klay, the Dubs can't win a championship. I know they won't tank, but would they be better off tanking? and having two lottery picks in a strong draft rather than a first-round exit. Like you said, you know they're not going to tank, all right? And I'll say this. Don't get greedy. The Minnesota pick is a luxury. Understand that the Timberwolves are probably not going to be that great this year. You've got a chance at a lottery pick in a loaded draft. Be happy with that and know that that's your insurance and that's your just free card to say, let's be as good as we can this year. Yeah, Klay Thompson got hurt. The title hopes are probably washed. You're not winning a championship this year. I agree. It's not happening. But you can still make the playoffs. You can still make some noise and you can still build some equity. So I say don't get greedy, but also don't take the culture for granted. I know people talk about the Warriors all the time and how great of a culture it is and all these things, but man, it's so hard to preach culture and winning ways and all these things if you're in the lottery two straight years. It's really hard to do that, even if you're the Warriors, even with that track record, even with some of the players that they have. It's tough. All right, this is a what have you done for me lately league. You can afford one gap year. It's excused. Kevin Durant leaves. Klay Thompson gets hurt. Steph Curry gets hurt. You have an excuse. But if Steph Curry is out there and you just tank this year, you no longer have that excuse. Culture is not permanent. So when you look around the league at teams that have the similar culture to the Warriors, the Spurs, the Raptors, the Miami Heat, do they tank? No, they don't. Do they have bad years? Yeah, just like the Warriors did. But they will not purposely tank. That is just as much a part of the culture as anything else. All right, culture is practice. It's not just something that's set in stone and just exists in perpetuity. It doesn't work that way. You got to practice the culture. And I think the Warriors believe that. And so, yeah, they're not going to tank. Would they be better off? I don't think so in the long run. I think that you've got the first round pick, make the most out of it. Plus, if you've got three lottery picks in 2 years, how many rookies do you really want to introduce to this championship core? Even two of them might be too much. You've got Wiseman. They'll probably have another one next year unless you trade it. Be happy with that and just get back to your winning ways and just keep on trucking. The Warriors may still need their second year players to step up. I'll tell you what kind of role they'll play next. This is Locked On Warriors. The wait is almost over, and next season is almost here, and the Locked On NBA podcast will get you ready with a special week of shows beginning December 14th. Get previews of every team, division by division, from all 30 of our Locked On local experts, including us. Plus, waiver wire editions from Locked On Fantasy Basketball, rookies to watch from Chad Ford, and predictions on each division from Rejecting the Screen. Subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get your podcasts. Zevin writes in, what are the Warriors expecting from Eric Paschal this year? Seems like he could make a serious leap and average 15-plus points per game efficiently if things come together and the jump shot looks good. So last year, Paschal averaged 14 points per game in 27 minutes per game as a rookie, right? I think, first of all, he's probably not seeing 27 minutes per game this year, so he's going to really have to amp up his efficiency to even get to 14 points per game. This is a big question year for Eric Paschal. I think what he did as a rookie was really impressive. But he did it without most of the players that he's going to be playing with in his second year. He did it without playing next to Steph Curry. He did it in a slowed down system, in a system that just asked him to score and needed him, leaned on him to get into isolation possessions and score out of those situations. They're not going to ask him to do that nearly as much, if at all, this season. Maybe he does it a little bit with the second unit. We'll see. But the question again with Paschal is, are you a guy who can coexist within this ecosystem, within this scheme, this ball movement ethos that Steve Kerr has created around Steph Curry? Can you exist within that scheme? Or are you a come off the bench, microwave score, go get a bucket kind of guy? Both of those outcomes is a really good outcome for a second round pick. Okay, the Warriors would be happy with either of those outcomes. But it is a question mark. Is he a guy who's going to be in your top six, seven of a rotation? Or is he a break in case of emergency of score off the bench type of guy? We'll find out, I think, this year. Allen writes in, which do you think has a better opportunity to get rotation minutes, Jordan Poole or Michael Mulder? Or is there another player out there ahead of them for that 12th rotation spot? I think at first you'll see Michael Mulder is not even guaranteed to make this roster. Okay, he's on a non-guaranteed contract. If they want to leave a spot open, it'd be really easy to just go ahead and waive him, maybe convert him to a two-way contract, something like that. They could do that and create an open roster spot if they want to go ahead and use a dislevel player exception down the line, or maybe another part of their mid-level exception that they have remaining at some point during the year. I think Jordan Poole is a good bet to say he sees more rotation minutes. They like the work that he's put in the offseason. Steve Kerr has said several times how impressed he's been with Jordan Poole's work over the offseason. Says he's worked the hardest and probably has made the most strides between last year and this year. So they're going to want to see what he could do on the court, right? You're going to want to see that stuff in game action. Whatever it was that he was working on, they're going to want to see if it's there. And he's going to get a chance early on. He's going to have a chance. He's going to play point guard. He's going to play shooting guard. Steve Kerr thinks he's a combo guard that could play a little bit on the ball and off the ball. You'll probably see him playing next to a ball handler most of the time. I could see him and Brad Wanamaker playing quite a few minutes together in that second unit. And if that shooting comes along for him, then you've really got something, because he's got some natural playmaking skills that work within that within Steve Kerr's offense that asks for, you know, playmaking and quick decision making and up tempo style of play. So Jordan Poole is a good bet to get some minutes early on. They'll see what he can do, and then they'll go from there and decide whether or not, you know, he should be a part of that core rotation going forward. All right, that's it for today. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors wherever you listen to podcasts. Please rate, review, say nice things about the show. Thanks to Built Go for sponsoring the show. You can send your comments and questions to me on Twitter at WC Goldberg or email them to wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and I'll see you here next week.